and there shall be an highway for the remnant of his people.
The unconverted heart can't understand the ways of God. The unconverted heart can't understand the Bible. The unconverted heart can't do the things of God, cannot be righteous. That's impossible. That's legalism.
Welcome to Highway for the Remnant. Again, I'd like to thank you very much from the bottom of our hearts. We'd like to express our gratitude for your consistent prayers and support of this most vital ministry. Once again, I want to remind you also that due to periodic equipment failure, some of you may not receive your CD. I apologize for this inconvenience, but please do let us know if you do not receive your monthly message so that we can make it good. In 1 John chapter 3, verse 8, we read, "He that committeth sin is of the devil, for the devil sinneth from the beginning. For this purpose the Son of God was manifested, that he might destroy the works of the devil." The Apostle John uses some strong words in his first little epistle, words that place the sinner in a very precarious and undesirable position. The sinner is recognized as of the devil. Yet in the same epistle, John brings words of hope and encouragement that the sinner has the potential of living a victorious Christian life in Jesus. And what is it that can bring about this wonderful transformation? He tells us very clearly here in 1 John chapter 3, verse 3, that whosoever abideth in him sinneth not. Whosoever sinneth hath not seen him, neither known him. So the condition is to abide in him. Pastor Scott Schaefer brings this out in a beautiful way in the sermon that you are about to hear. So may God bless you and may he encourage you as we go live now to this month's message, Children of the Devil.
Shook. The clouds rolled in, dark, menacing clouds on that fateful day, fateful afternoon when Jesus was crucified. The very ground shook, the clouds rolled in, the lightning bolts flashed. People were very afraid and very scared. In the middle of all of this, in the middle of all the drama and the panic and the concern there and all the horror that was going on there at the crucifixion scene, one man falls on his knees, and it was none other than the chief executioner, the centurion in charge there at the scene of Calvary. He falls on his knees and he looks up at that middle cross and he says, and you can read it for yourself in Matthew chapter 27, he looks up and he says, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." Amazing testimony that he gave that day. Truly, this was the Son of God. Yes, because Jesus died on Calvary, you and I can be saved. What a joy, what a privilege, what an honor that Jesus died for us. If you'll take your Bibles there, come back to 1 John 3, as today we finish our series on 1 John chapter 3. Look at verse, for starters here this morning, look at verse 16 of 1 John chapter 3, the little postcard of 1 John, there in verse 16. "Hereby perceive we the love of God," or that's how we see or recognize the love of God, "because he did" what? "Laid down his life for us. That's for you. That's for me. Put your own name there. You know, laid down his life for Scott, and laid down his life for Pauline, and laid down his life for Alfred, and so forth. Put your own name in there. Laid down his life for us. No wonder Paul said, while we were yet sinners, in Romans 5, verse 8, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And you'll notice, if you look back in 1 John 3, back to verses 8 and 9, that's where we started a few weeks ago in part 1 of this series, but back in verse 8, he that committeth sin is of the devil, for the devil sinneth from the beginning. For this purpose the Son of God was manifested, that he might destroy the works of the devil. I praise the Lord for that. Satan is going to be destroyed. Sin and sinners are going to be destroyed. The evil will not go on throughout eternity. Jesus will destroy it. Whosoever is born of God doth not commit sin. Remember, we talked about that in great detail. For his seed remaineth in him. He cannot sin because he is born of God. Jesus died not only for the fact that you can be forgiven and that I can be forgiven, that too. But Jesus died so that you and I can know what it means to be born again. Born again, having the heart changed. And the heart transformation. We'll get into that in a little bit later on. But look back again in 1 John 3. You may wonder why I've entitled the sermon today the strange title that it is, Children of the Devil. I don't want to be a child of the devil, do you? No, I don't think so. Why would we describe it that way? Here's a description. Look at verse 10 of 1 John chapter 3. In this, the children of God are manifest. Now, wait. Remember back in verses 8 and 9? Whosoever is born of God doth not commit sin. Remember that? That's how the children of God are manifested. They don't commit sin because they've been born again, right? In this, the children of God are manifest, or they're revealed. But there's also going to be others who will be revealed too. You look right there in the middle of verse 10, and the children of the devil. Here they are. Oh boy, we got to deal with them too. Whosoever doeth not the righteousness, or doeth not righteousness, is not of God. Neither he that loveth not his brother. For this is the message that ye heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Then he goes, and he talks about that a lot, doesn't he? But look at verse 12. Not as Cain. Now wait. Who was Cain? Don't we know about Cain? Wasn't he back there in the book of Genesis? We'll go there in just a minute. But it says, not as Cain, who was of that wicked one, slew his brother. And wherefore or why did he slay his brother? And this is a key in his statement. Because his own works were evil and his brother's righteous. He couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle it that Abel's sacrifice was accepted of God and his wasn't. The world can never get to the point to where they will say, well, you just do whatever you want, whatever religion you want, whatever God you want to serve, and I'll do mine, and we'll just happily all be together. Whatever term they want to call it, unity and diversity, or whatever the term that they call it today. They're never going to be satisfied with that. Never going to allow that. Cain could not handle it. Notice it says, because his works were evil, his brother's righteous. Then John says in verse 13, marvel not, or don't be perplexed, or don't be concerned, or amazed, or shocked, my brethren, if the world what? Evidently, there's something in that story of Cain and Abel that's going to be repeated in these last days. There's something there that's important for us. So keep your finger in 1 John. And let's go clear back. Here we go. Genesis chapter 4. Back to the story of Cain and Abel. Who were they anyway? Genesis chapter 4. Well, of course, if you look through the Bible there, you will see. And if you read the whole chapter, you'll see that were not Cain and Abel the first children born on this world? Were they not the sons of Adam and Eve? Were they not? Yes? As they got a little older, they too came for sacrifices and to offer things to God. Notice, and this is very important to catch, folks. Notice very carefully that both of them came with an offering. Just because someone's in church or just because someone comes to worship doesn't mean that their heart is right with God. Both of them came with an offering. That's why Paul warned us over there in the New Testament when he says over there that they have the form thereof but deny the power. They will heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. So let's get to it here. Genesis chapter 4, verse 8. In the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. Notice it wasn't some old stale fruit. Notice it was the best that he had. He came and brought an offering. And Abel, verse 4 of Genesis 4, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and his offering, but, and you know Pastor Scott and the butts of the Bible, but unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect. Somehow, in some way, God visibly revealed his manifestation or manifested his power and visibly showed that he recognized Abel's sacrifice and not Cain's. I don't know how that was. Maybe fire came down from heaven as it did years later, centuries later in the days of Elijah. I don't know. But in any case, somehow God recognized his offering but would not recognize Cain's. And Cain got mad, if we could put it that way. You'll see there in verse 5. Cain was very wroth. That's an old King James English word, old English word, wroth, which is where we get the word wrath, angry, irate. You ever use that word here lately? Irate, mad, angry, furious, whatever. His countenance fell. And the Lord even tried to stop him. The Lord even, in his mercy, God came to Cain and tried to stop what was about to happen. You'll see it there. The Lord said unto Cain in verse 6, "Why art thou wroth? Why are you angry, buddy? Why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, will you not be accepted? I'll accept your offering too if you do what I say and follow my ways." Abel has no advantage over you, brother. You can do the same thing that he did. You can do the same thing. Why are you so angry? And if thou doest not well, sin lies at the door. Kind of like when Jesus spoke to Judas there on the night, when the night of the Last Supper, when Judas had already betrayed Jesus, and Judas gets up to leave, and Jesus looks at him, and what does Jesus say? He says to him, "What you do, do quickly." I used to think that's where Jesus was saying, "Hurry up, because this is going to be painful, and I don't want to do all this." But I'm beginning to see that what Jesus was really saying was reaching out to Judas. And in essence, what he was really saying there was, "Brother, you're walking a fine line here, buddy. You are on the edge of the precipice. You're on the edge of a cliff. What you're going to do? Make up your mind now, son. You still have opportunity to repent. You still have opportunity. Do it now." Unfortunately, Judas walked out in the dark. And in the book of Acts, it describes where Judas committed suicide. God comes to Cain. "Cain, you're walking on the edge of a cliff, my friend. You're on the edge of something very dangerous, something very wicked, something very evil." Verse 8, Cain talked with Abel, his brother. Oh, don't you wish you could have known what that conversation was like? And somehow I think we know. How many of you, as I look out over you this morning, how many of you, maybe with friends, neighbors, relatives, whatever, you've described your convictions about the Lord, you've described your beliefs in Jesus, and you've been made fun of, you've been laughed at, scoffed at, thought you were strange, whatever. That's nothing new. Look at this. This is Cain and Abel. These are the first children born to this world. And there they are. They had this conversation. Whatever. Well, we can just imagine what that was like. "It came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and slew him." Cain committed the world's first homicide. Not only did he kill somebody, but he killed his own brother, for crying out loud. Killed his own brother. And Adam and Eve lost two sons in one fell swoop. One to death, one had to run and hide. And run for his very life. those characteristics, that story is being and will be replayed again and again until Jesus comes. That's why in 1 John, coming back over there, in 1 John chapter 3, marvel not, my brethren, if the world hates you. Jesus even told us, he told us through his disciples in John, the Gospel of John, chapter 15, and let's take just a quick peek over there. In John 15, look at verses 18 and 19. If the world hates you, Jesus says, ye know that it hated me before it hated you. If ye were of the world, and I'm in the Gospel of John now, chapter 15, moving on to verse 19. If ye were of the world would love his own. Oh my, we know what that's like, don't we? I once talked with a lady I was having Bible studies with, a lady who had been involved in at one time in her life, she had been involved in selling drugs. And she told me, she said, Pastor Scott, she said at one time, she said, I was making well over $1,000 a day. She said, I was doing well. She said, I was living the high life. She said, I would go to parties. And she said, when I would go to those parties, she said, I was the center of attraction. She said, because everybody there knew that I had something that they wanted. She said, and I was liked. I had friends. I had everything you want. And praise God, she had changed. God had gotten a hold of her and changed her life. And she was actually living on welfare when I met her. But she said, Pastor Scott, she said, I don't care. She said, I'll never go back to that lifestyle again. And she said, I was the life of the party. If the world, well, how did he put it? If you were of the world would love his own. But because you're not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Please don't misunderstand. This does not mean that God's people cower in some corner and have what I call the martyrdom complex, cowering in a corner somewhere and scared to death. But it does mean, that being said, it does mean that when you and I follow Jesus Christ, and when we have surrendered our lives to Him, the world will hate you. Your friends are going to be different. The places you go are going to be different. The people you hang around with are different. The things that you find yourself doing are different. Again, this is far more than just joining a church. This is a way of life. God changes from the inside out. And that's what John is trying to say there in 1 John chapter 3. Marvel not, my brethren, if the world hates you. You see, the heart must be changed. Cain and Abel both brought an offering. And God bless him. You know, Cain didn't say, well, I'm not going to worship God. I'm not going to come. No, he came with an offering. But the heart wasn't right with God. The heart wasn't right. And folks, God's teaching me so much in His patience and in His love. The heart must be right. My heart, your heart. The heart must be right. Why was Cain so angry? Notice over here, 1 Corinthians chapter 2. And verse 14, here it is. 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 14. Notice what he says. But the natural man, that's the unconverted heart, that's you and I before we're converted. But the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God. Again, that's 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 14. The natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are what unto him? The unconverted heart can't understand the ways of God. The unconverted heart can't understand the Bible. The unconverted heart can't do the things of God, cannot be righteous. That's impossible. That's legalism. Legalism says that we can change God's law and we can do what we want and still be following Him. We can change God's law to Sunday if we want to, and His Sabbath from Sabbath to Sunday if we want to. Or we can do this or do that. That's legalism. The heart must be changed. You and I, until Jesus takes control of our heart, and we are like the centurion who fell there at the foot of the cross and said, truly this man was the Son of God, until that happens, the Bible's not going to make sense to us. Oh yes, we can learn from commentaries, and we can study, and we can do research, and we can gather together and praise God. We can do all that. John's been doing a beautiful job on Tuesday nights. Hasn't that been wonderful? been doing a beautiful job going through the Bible. You see, but for it to really be understood, the heart has to be changed. Coming back to 1 Corinthians 2:14, they are foolishness unto him, neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. But he that is spiritual judges all things. In verse 16, for who hath known the mind of the Lord, that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. The same Bible writer says over in Romans chapter 8, and we'll take a quick look over there, in Romans chapter 8 in verse 6, he says, for to be carnally minded is death. Romans 8, verse 6. Carnally minded means, again, it comes back to the being unconverted, the natural heart. To be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Think about this, and if you remember nothing else this morning, I want you to realize, and for me to realize as well, right along with you, that our hearts have to be changed by God. Jesus died so your heart can be changed. When that happens, what we do with our minds, what we put into our minds, are going to be affected. The heart is changed. God works from the inside out. Inside out. When we're following after the world, the world gets into us, and then we become a lover of the world instead of a lover of God. And yes, I know, it's when so many people today, they want to be Christian and they want to be in the world at the same time. And folks, as we get closer and closer and still closer to the second coming of Jesus, that's going to become even more and more still difficult, become more and more impossible. It's always been impossible, but it will become even more so. God's people are going to be clinging to Jesus. And I know the world is going to say, and I dare say people even will say in the church, they will say, hey, you've gone fanatical. You've gone crazy. You've freaked out. Now you've taken this way too far. Let them say what they're going to say. It doesn't matter. What matters most is our connection with Jesus. That's what matters. The world will pull us away from God. Look over, if you will. Here we go. James chapter 4. And verse 4. Then we'll come back to 1 John. James 4 and verse 4. He makes this very clear. Ye adulterers and adulteresses. He doesn't mince the words, does he? Ye adulterers and adulteresses. Know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? The word enmity there means in opposition to, in confrontation with, opposed to. Friendship of the world is enmity with God. Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, Pastor Scott, you know, does this mean that we're supposed to just quit everything, sell our homes, quit our jobs, and all run off into the woods somewhere up in the mountains and live as a bunch of hermits up there? Sounds kind of nice, actually, in a way, doesn't it? As we face the challenges of life, sounds kind of nice. On the other hand, Jesus said, ye are in the world, but not of the world. It's not us that's doing the rejecting. The world rejects God. When we accept Jesus, friendship of the world is enmity against God. This is why, friends, this is why Christians and Seventh-day Adventists have for years promoted the standards of the church and the standards of lifestyle, not to be legalistic, not to be nitpicking into each other's lives and all of that foolishness or beating people over the head. That's not the point. The point is so that the standards can reveal Jesus, because when you're absorbed in the things of the world, when we're absorbed in the things, even somewhat good things there, even with the television and the internet and these other things, when we're so much absorbed into the world, that's who we become like. The enmity, love of the God, or love of the world, leads to enmity against God. Come back to 1 John chapter 2. See, even our very tastes, our joys, our habits, everything gets changed in our lives by Jesus Christ. 1 John chapter 2. Look at verse 15. I think we've touched on this verse before in this series. Anyway, it's very good. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. 1 John 2:15, now on to 16. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, Boy, oh boy, we could make a long list from right there, couldn't we? The lust of the flesh, but he's not done. The lust of the eyes. Oh boy, we could talk about a lot of things there too. The pride of life. You see, pride gets in the way and messes up the... messes up the works. Mucks up the works. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God does what? Wow. Wow. The old world, folks, it's going away. It may seem like sin and sinners are going to have the upper hand. It may seem like they will be in charge. It may seem like God's people are persecuted, put down, beaten around, done away with, killed, murdered, whatever. Things, their possessions taken away. It may seem like we will be considered the scouring of the earth, but that's okay. One day, God will win. In fact, He already has. He already has. But when you and I cling to the world, we put a slap in the face to God. The world passes away, and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. You see, when the heart is changed, love can flow. When the heart is changed, love can flow. Look back to our main passage in 1 John 3. Look at verse 11. For this is the message. This is 1 John chapter 3. For this is the message that ye heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Then he goes on down in verse 14. I know I'm skipping around here a little bit, but look at verse 14 of 1 John 3. We know that we have passed from death unto life because how? How do we know? Love the brethren. Now, I ask you, how do you pass from death to life? Isn't that what that's talking about there? Isn't that talking about the new birth experience? Isn't that talking about how you and I each day, and I don't care, pastor, elder, I don't care if you've been a member forever or for a day or whatever your experience is in your life. It all comes down to you and I being willing to surrender our hearts to God to be being born again. That can happen every day. When that happens, self dies. And I know. You know, I have temptations too. We're all in this together. This has to happen more than once. This has to happen frequently. That death to self. That death to self. We have passed from death to life if we love the brethren. Could that be why Paul said in that famous classic verse in Galatians 2, verse 20, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. The life I now live in the flesh, I now live by the faith of the Son of God. I don't think I quoted it exactly right, but I'm pretty close. I am crucified with Christ. That centurion there, as he looked up at Calvary and he saw Jesus dying on that cross. You and I can look up there too each day. I know that it was nearly 1,900 years ago, almost 2,000 years ago, or 1,900 years ago, whenever it was when Jesus died. But you and I each day can look at that cross and say, Lord, may there be a death and burial today. Bury my past. Bury my life. Bury the selfishness. Bury self, whatever it is. Bury it there in the past so that I can have a new life. Paul also said in 1 Corinthians 15, I die daily. That's a daily experience and a daily walk. And it's one that you and I can take on every day. That's why Abel could stand there and look at his brother and say, brother, probably with tears in his eyes, brother, you can have the same blessings I'm having. God will honor your sacrifice. Just do what God says. And it's all yours, brother. And even showed love to his brother, pleading with his brother, even as his brother kills him. That's why, and I want to finish right here in 1 John 3. Verses 16 to 18. Now it gets real practical here. Hereby perceive we the love of God. Didn't we start there this morning in 1 John 3:16? Hereby perceive we the love of God, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and truth. Don't just talk the talk, but walk the walk along with it. And the only way that can happen is when you and I have learned to surrender ourselves and die to self with Jesus every day. That's where the love comes in. That's how the love comes in. That's how this is going to be. There will be people. Well, as we get closer to the second coming, there will be people, friends, and we're already seeing it. There will be people who have been in the very thick of sin and wickedness and evil. Terrible pasts. But God will change them as brands from the burning and change them. And we're seeing that happen. At the same time, we're going to see people who have been in the church for many years and they're going to be ashamed and embarrassed about our message. And we're seeing that too. We now have pastors and others who are now decrying and denouncing some of the key pillars of our faith. How can this be? It all comes down to the fact you and I must learn what it means to have our hearts surrendered to Jesus and have the heart be changed. Have the heart be changed.
The Vital End Time Ministry of Highway for the Remnant is made possible by your faithful prayers and generous support, enabling us to spread present truth messages at home and abroad. To contact us, visit our website at highwaytotheremnant.com, or you may email us at remnanthighway@hughes.net. You may also use the enclosed envelope for a change of address, or to submit the name of someone who would appreciate these very important messages. Our prayer is that when Jesus appears the second time, he will find a people rooted and grounded and proclaiming the three angels' messages. And now we continue with Highway for the Remnant's health segment and story time.